back into open session after our closed session. Let me see. Mr. Seitz, can you announce out, please?
Thank you. Mr. President, members of the board, members of the audience, excuse me, at 8 a.m. this morning, we did hold a closed session regarding existing litigation. This is pursuant to Government Code Section 54956.9, existing litigation. This is the Santa Maria Valley groundwater adjudication. As you may be aware from the audience who may not be aware, it events on next Monday up in San Jose or Santa Clara. We did hear an update from our legal counsel as to the district strategies and how we intend to approach this phase four trial. However, there is no reportable action.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Seitz. This time, I'd like to open it to public comment on any item that is not on today's agenda, but is under the jurisdiction of the board. Presentation will be limited to 3 minutes. Seeing none, we will then close it. Okay. Thank you, Mrs. Morrison. Please state your name and whether you're an NCSD customer or not.
Good morning, board and staff and audience. My name is Judith Worsing, and I reside within the Napomo Community Services District. I've come before the board of directors today as a citizen of this community and ratepayer of this agency. It has come to my attention with great concern and urgency that the general manager of the services district has submitted his career change.
Mrs. Worsing, that's not appropriate at this time. That's an item for closed session.
Okay. Then,
it's not an appropriate item. It's a closed session item. It is not for public discussion at this time.
I beg to disagree.
It's on our agenda as a closed session item.
Okay, well, the way that agenda item reads is...
We have not gotten to that item at this point in time.
Right. That's that's just a discussion of code.
Maybe I can add something. We have a personnel item on the agenda tonight. At the close of this meeting regarding personnel issues, and it would be, of course, that's one of the clear expressions of the district board of directors to meet in closed session to review personnel items and to be able to discuss those issues frankly between themselves regarding personnel matters in closed session. Of course, we are required to report out of closed session of any actions that the board has taken. Once an issue becomes public, you know, maybe the discussion arena changes a little bit, but still, it's still a personnel matter between the board and its employees. And, you know, the government code section in the Brown Act specifically allows for these types of discussions in closed session. Of course, that's government code section 54957. So I do believe that to the extent that there's any connection between a public comment, especially from a director who is going to, of course, be in closed session regarding a closed session item, I think it's just way premature for that type of comment to take place, if it should take place at all.
Well, that was my feeling, because up to whatever time it does become public, it should not be public information.
Question? It sounds like there's two issues here. One is that it's an agenda item and therefore it's not subject to public comment until you get to that agenda item.
Right.
And the other is a confidentiality issue.
Right. And that is that, of course, board members, just by the nature of being their board, come to information to prepare for closed session. You know, in order for them to prepare their thoughts and to participate in closed session, you know, staff attempts to provide their boards with the information so that they're just not taken aback by going into closed session and discovering what it is. But again, that material is confidential material until it's made determined whether or not it is a public record or it's going to be disclosed to the public as a result of a closed session announcement. So the reality is here is that, you know, when directors come into that confidential information regarding closed session, it is to remain confidential. That's the whole point of it. Otherwise, there would be no point in distributing information. Like today, you got memos today regarding the ongoing adjudication, and so that you could prepare for today's meeting and have bring yourself up to speed or to have some knowledge and background so that you could ask questions and have a feeling with the ghost. The same thing applies to personnel issues. You just don't disclose confidential information related to closed session items.
May I speak?
Sure.
I believe that when we have closed session and it clearly states what we are going to discuss, but I believe that the one that's on the tail end of this meeting is vague and it only discusses code. It does not discuss the actual ramifications to the public. That this effect, besides that, we have hired additional people to assist this personnel issue, which I think is should not. So then if I go to, could we go to will there be a closed session and there's a determination that we will vote on something, and then if I vote no, then I can discuss this in public? Or will there be in this closed session not an opportunity to place a vote?
Well, first of all, whether or not there's a vote is up to the, I mean, first of all, let me just point out something here. This is the worst position. I don't like debating policy with my clients, obviously, in this situation, but I must take the opportunity. I don't want to sound like I'm arguing a point here with you or
you really should carry the
or any board member.
Don't make staff do it.
Whether or not a vote is taken in closed session is dependent on what comes before the closed session in closed session and what transpires. I mean, that's the job of the chair, to take a vote, and then the vote is, of course, has to be announced. And within the context of the Brown Act in closed sessions, the votes are always taken by roll call because we are obligated to announce those in favor and those opposed under the Brown Act. So the question is will a no vote be recorded and made public? The answer to that question is yes. Now the question about the broader question about discussions about what goes on in closed session is another issue. Obviously, confidential information that is exchanged in closed session doesn't become public. But that doesn't mean that the conclusions reached in closed session don't become public.
Right, so this could.
I'm going to need to just make a decision here as president of the board that this is an item that is to remain confidential with no public disclosure until that is so decided in the coming closed session.
None of the public's business.
I
will tell you that I disagree.
It's not the public's. It's not, Mrs. Worsen, please. It is not the public's business until the board as a whole says that it's public business, and that won't happen until we get to that item in closed session.
Clary, tell her she can come back later.
Yeah.
Of course.
Well, once it's been made public, then, and what you have to say can certainly be brought out in closed session.
When?
After it's been discussed in closed session.
but then I can't go public.
Sure you can.
Because as long as there's not a vote, because there may not be a vote, then it's not public then. And I disagree that what's going to be discussed in closed session is different. Thank you.
Okay, well, thank you. Anyway.
That's okay.
Any more public comment on items not on the agenda? This happens to be on the agenda, so that's another point. Seeing none, then we'll move on to the consent agenda, warrants, board meeting minutes. There were, I believe, safety meeting minutes and a reapplication for an intent to serve letter.
I have two questions.
Mr. Eby, please.
The check for IPAC, I think I understood you to say in the past that they weren't billing us until they were essentially done. Is this the first time that they've been paid, or?
No. No, we have, it's roughly $250,000 contract, and we're at about $220,000 of expenditure, so we've got about $30,000 in the contract. And right now we have pending is a meeting with utility supervisor and the contractor myself to define what remains in the contract, and you know.
But is this most of it? After you pay this, or you have most
after, of it? After we pay this, we have $30,000 or about 10% remaining, a little greater than 10%.
Okay. My second question is on the reapplication for service.
Yes.
Will this person be paying the new capacity fee?
Right. This person hasn't paid any capacity fees yet. All they've paid so far is the administrative fee of for processing application. So yes, they will come under capacity fees at the time that they're proceeding. And there are a number. I have another one of these now pending for our next agenda. So what we're starting to see is folks' intent to serve letters. They're having a hard time meeting our 2 years as they move through the county. But as long as they're, and as this one has shown, that they're diligently pursuing the project, then I'll bring them forward in this manner. If it looks like a project's gone quiet and all of a sudden they show up and want to say that they're proceeding with the county but can't produce evidence, well then we'll bring that in front of the board and talk about what the real objective of the developer in that case.
Mr. Wynn, do you have any?
On the consent agenda?
Comments, items you want to hold, or anything?
Only on the minutes. On page 3, there are a number of summaries of my comments, and staff did an excellent job summarizing those, by the way. We usually just tell you when we're not happy, but I'm happy with these, except the one that says land behind Chevron has been put for sale. The central part of my comment was that we were told that this was being sold because the NCSD would not provide water for 10 to 15 years. Otherwise, real estate does not come beyond within our purview. Now, that is not what we did, and I think that's been clarified since with the people who were saying that. But at the time, that's what I was told, and I wanted to make sure that we got it corrected.
Yeah, I was rather surprised by that comment.
Well,
so what do you want to say?
We were able to identify, I would just add, reportedly, because NCSD would not provide water for 10 to 15 years. Please, thank you. Otherwise, I have no comments.
Mr. Dryer?
I have a comment about the minutes. This is on page 2, under Director Trotter. The first sentence is accurate. The last sentence, starting with, he stated that it was inappropriate for the speakers to be here. What I said was, it's inappropriate for them to speak. It's a public meeting. They can come, do anything they wish. So if you, it'd be more accurate if you change to be here to speak.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Potter. Mrs. Mercy, do you have any
Yes, please.
Changes to the minutes?
Not to the minutes.
For anything?
For H4. I just needed to ask to see if this project had been included in the water allocation.
It had not. This was issued prior to our water allocation.
So would it now be?
That is what I have done in the past, and I didn't do that here. Right, the residential portion, and that's a good catch. I can allocate that residential portion tonight. I'll double check on that to see if it's, I don't know that, if that, on that summary I have in my manager's report that shows there. If it doesn't, I didn't pick that up.
And one more comment.
I didn't see it there.
Okay.
Yes, please.
Okay, on this, this letter that's dated March 24, 2004, that's in regards to this H4. The paragraph that's on the first page, you know, it says this is not a will serve letter. And then down the very last paragraph, is this current verbiage?
No. March 2004 verbiage.
We don't. You still use that same verbiage.
John might know better off the top of his head, but... No, it's our intent to serve language has changed. And this looks more like that will serve language. Can you find that? We have changed our intent to serve language.
Yeah, we have changed. You're comparing Doug's letter to Michael's letter?
No.
Well, I'm just, all I can see is this paragraph here, so. So I don't know if it's current.
Right.
Right. The language that you see down here as the bottom part.
Yes.
This is actually will serve language.
So is this still current? And is this current language?
Yeah, we put in a very similar one when we issue a will serve letter. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, that language showed up in an intent to serve letter. When you take a look at that bottom paragraph, because what we're doing here is this certifies that we will provide potable water, and actually what that is will serve language as opposed to intent to serve language. The intent to serve language establishes two things. I don't want to belabor this, but one is it establishes a nexus between the district and the developer so that they can process their project when they have the conditions that they have to fulfill. Once those conditions are fulfilled, then we send the county a letter verifying that they have full conditions and that we will serve the project. And what you're seeing down here is language that's typically, as Michael says, our will serve policy, not our intent to serve.
And then let's see.
In fact, if I may, Director Wilson, at the bottom of the recommendation on the staff report is I have it bulleted there, but that is our current final paragraph language of our intent to serve. Subject to current, future, and then maybe revoked. That basically, those two points are what we break into that bottom paragraph now on an intent to serve. So this is something we caught and corrected last year.
Okay, thank you.
Would you refresh my memory on these? Normally, an intent to serve letter is good for 2 years, and there's several different dates in there depending on getting a completed plan in and other things. When we extend it, do we automatically extend it for two more every time?
I think maybe we should pull this from the agenda because this is on the consent agenda. We seem to be having a fairly broad discussion over.
Then I'll ask that it be pulled for separate decision if that's okay.
Well, thank you, Mr. H3 will be pulled. Any other comments?
H4.
Yeah. Any other comments or corrections to the committee?
I move that we approve the consent agenda minus H4, subject to the amendments that were suggested.
Second.
Okay. Madam Secretary?
Director Eby?
Yes.
Director Winn?
Yes.
Director Worsley?
Yes.
Director Carter?
Yes.
President Verhaeghe?
Yes. Okay, and we can now discuss number H4.
Thank you, President Verhaeghe. I'll get right to the question that I guess is easiest. And typically we issue, this is reissuing an intent to serve letter, so the issue period is 2 years. Again, at the state of this project, as I've outlined, we have development plans in a plan check inspection agreement. I don't foresee there being a problem with them meeting that 2 years. I fully expect them to be at the will serve stage within a few months.
Okay.
But I just basically put it right back into the intent to serve procedure, and as was pointed out, we allot to the residential portion, and that just resets their time frame.
It seemed to me that if an intent to serve letter expired, which this has not,
right,
and then they came to us and told us about their circumstances and said we would like a new intent to serve letter. It would have all the new language that we've inserted in the last 2 years, and they would start off with 2 years under a new regime. If we're going to take an old one, which does not have all the conditions, to extend it for a year seems different to me than a fresh 2-year start. And I realize that's a policy issue and it doesn't affect this specific issue, but I was curious.
Well, I'd agree, and I think we typically take the position of we're reevaluating, reissuing a new intent to serve. We're going to allot your water. We give this intent to serve will look much more like our current intent to serve with a number of conditions. The only conditions I've left out on the bullet points here that we typically see are those conditions that they've already met on the project.
Good.
So I think we take the opportunity to bring it in, or if you will, bring it up to our current administrative procedure, and in doing so, to give them a 2-year period. But again, I don't see that. I mean, if that's a fair exchange to say, well, now you have 2 years to start over, so that we can put all of our new conditions on there. It seems like we're ahead.
Good. So you issue them a new letter?
I have not.
No, but you will.
Yes.
It'll be new text and everything, and it'll be up to date.
Yes.
And just to...
And I'll have those expiration, the expiration there at the fifth bullet down, that expiration language is what I'm proposing now.
Right, and I just want to go to the March 24th, 2004 intent to serve letter. And what you see down there is what our typical statement is on intent to serve letters. It says this intent to serve letter shall be subject to the current and future rules, regulations, fees, resolutions, and ordinance of the communities of the Napomo Community Services District. And of course, we have changed our rules and regulations regarding our intent to serve letters, and he's now reapplying for them. So it's always been staff in this district's position to has put much language into our intent to serve letters to put the developer on notice that the 2 years means something. Now, we know it's not their, we're not assigning fault whether or not they can get the project through or something, but we're only willing to allocate a commitment for water service for a 2-year period. And you might remember it used to be a 1-year period.
I know.
And the development community came to us and said that's just impossible for us to do. And so we landed on the 2 years.
As I outlined before we pulled it off, but we have other of these in the queue. I think with what developers are running into with multifamily housing and the building permit timing, that we may see some other developments come to us. I think we will in the coming years that cannot make the two-year timeframe. They're making the eight-month timeframe. They're getting applications, complete applications to the county, but then the processing of that application is taking them far out.
Yeah.
Yeah, much more than 2 years.
So.
Do you have off the top of your head the memory of how much water this is going to use?
This project, it's relatively small. We've got four multi-use residential units.
That's the one across the street, right?
Multi-family residential.
It's going to be an office and then something up on top?
Two of the buildings have ground floor offices, and there are four buildings total. And so two of them have ground floor offices with residents upstairs, and the other two are residential totally. But there's residential, I think, in fact, we don't call those multifamily because they have different roofs, so it's going to be residential, I'm assuming, to be on the smallest lot size. I'll have to verify that, but if say that they're on our smallest lot size for a residential dwelling, then I believe it's 0.2 acre feet per residential building. I believe that's, yeah, might be 0.3. I think it's 0.2 though. John's not going to help me. but around that, you know, I know at our largest size we allocate out as a 0.55 on the larger parcel. So 0.2, 0.3, I have to look to be firm. But if we call 0.3 times the four homes, 1.2 acre feet would be the allocation, and all that'll be on our next allocation summary.
For clarification, please. So when it says four residential units, these can't be divided up. That's just for one family.
That's right.
Okay.
That's right. That's the way they're laid out. I that caught my eye on the application actually, and they are single dwelling units. Right. It's not one building with four different residential units in it. That is not the case here.
Mr. Trotter, do you have any comments on this item?
Move approval.
We have a motion by Mr. Wynn.
I'll second.
A second by Mr. Trotter. Thank you. And public comment on this particular item? Seeing none, then we'll bring it back to the board. And John, Madam Secretary.
Director Wynn?
Yes.
Director Trotter?
Yes.
Director Worthing?
Yes.
Director
Eby? Yes. Professor Behan? Yes. Okay, moving on to administrative items. I-1 is the draft county rural plan development policy. Mr. McBride.
Thank you, President Verheilig. Today we have a presentation by Mr. John Nall, County San Luis Obispo planning staff. And I'll let Mr. Nall get up to the podium, and I'll try to get a slideshow going here.
Mr. President, members of the board, I'm John Nall. I'm a principal environmental specialist with the Department of Planning and Building. I'm one of two managers in our environmental division at the planning department that takes care of our county CEQA process, doing environmental review on all of the discretionary applications that come through the planning department. I'm here this morning. I was invited by your board to talk about the proposed rural plan development ordinance. And what I'd like to do is I'm going to start, it's a rather complicated ordinance, and so I'm going to spend a little bit of time talking about the different components of the ordinance. Then I'm going to talk about what types of projects we think the ordinance would result in. And then I'm going to talk about the types of potential environmental impacts that we think could come out of an ordinance such as this. I also have, if I start to lose you during the presentation because of the complexity, I have some great conceptual pictures that I'm going to throw up that'll help bring you back and help you understand. New ordinances like the Rural Plan Development Ordinance are subject to the California Environmental Quality Act. And so when we when we're looking at a new ordinance like the RPD, we have to make a decision as to whether or not we're going to issue a negative declaration or whether or not an environmental impact report should be prepared. When staff completed the initial study for the rural plan development ordinance, we determined that there were potential significant impacts associated with this proposal. Upon completion of the initial study, we stepped back and we realized that the proposed ordinance was going to do several things in general. One of those was it was going to allow smaller parcel sizes than are currently allowed by the land use ordinance. Smaller parcels in certain categories than you can get today based on land use ordinance requirements. That it would allow more lots than a conventional subdivision under today's rules. So you come in under the RPD ordinance and you could actually get an increased number of lots than you could get today under the rules in our land use ordinance. And then one other component of this, and I'll get into this, is there's a component that would actually allow twice as many lots as currently exist on your subject property. It would double the number of lots that you have if you were to process an application under the Rural Plan Development Ordinance. A little bit of history on this thing. Back in April of 2002, the Board of Supervisors established the TDC Subcommittee, the Transfer Development Subcommittee. By the way, this is the same PowerPoint that the Board of Supervisors saw on June 25th when I made a recommendation to the Board of Supervisors that an environmental impact report should be prepared for the RPD ordinance. And so maybe I should get a little bit more into that background. On June 25th of 2005, I took an EIR recommendation to the Board. They considered my presentation. They considered quite a bit of public testimony on the item. And they opted at that point to continue the item and have staff go to talk to all of the county's advisory groups, Ag Liaison, Ag Task Force, the Water Resources Advisory Committee. Those were the groups that I was directed to go talk to. You guys weren't included in that group, but that's okay. Obviously, you have concerns over water availability, that kind of issue, and it's important that you weigh in on this. I'm going to ask you this morning, if you wish to reach some sort of a conclusion on this proposed ordinance this morning, I'm going to ask that you write me a letter regarding that, and I'm going to package that in my staff report that I take back to the Board of Supervisors sometime March or April is probably what we're looking at this point, going back to the Board. What the Board will do at that time is they'll take up this matter as to whether or not an environmental impact report should be prepared for this proposed ordinance, or the other option that they have before them is to simply can this ordinance, if you will.
Excuse me.
Yes, sir.
You use the term can.
That was probably not an appropriate term. To discontinue processing the ordinance.
Isn't it a state mandate?
Pardon?
Is it a state mandate?
No, sir, it is not. Nothing to do with this proposed ordinance.
What instigated this on the county level?
Let me get into that. That's where I was going with the history before I went on that sidetrack. Back in 2002, the Board created the TDC Subcommittee. And then the TDC subcommittee came up with, obviously, some of the early foundations of the Transfer Development Credit Program. But they also came up with an approach to deal with what the RPD ordinance is all about, and that's dealing with underlying legal lots of record. I'm going to explain what those are in just a second. They back in February 2003, they acted to authorize processing amendments to the LUO regarding an RPD. There was a group that was in charge of coming up with a project description for some type of a TDC ordinance. That group over time thinned down, and it became a group of Supervisor Ovid, Cacho, a local North County surveyor, I believe Jesse Hill from the South County was involved on this committee, or what was left of this committee. This committee decided that they needed to address the issue of underlying legal lots of record. And they proposed, this committee proposed the Rural Plan Development Ordinance. And the board then, back in February 2003, authorized processing of this proposed ordinance that this group came up with. They didn't approve the ordinance. They authorized processing. And what that means is the board makes a decision to direct staff to spend time, money, and effort going through the process, doing environmental review, and then bringing it back to the Planning Commission and the Board of Supervisors for their consideration as to whether or not they want to approve or deny it. So that was all put into motion back in 2003. When it came to my office is the one that does environmental review for these types of things. And we determined then, through the initial study process, that it did pose some problems, significant impact, potential problems on the environment. I'm going to talk about what those are. Does that help clear it up where it came from? In a nutshell, what RPD would do is it would allow different standards to be used in order to reconfigure lot lines. It would allow a reduction in minimum parcel sizes for three land use categories, only three land use categories. Those are agriculture, residential rural, and rural lands. And here's the key. What it would do is it would allow the reconfiguration of existing underlying lots into cluster type projects, where you have smaller residential parcels and then a larger open space parcel. And I'll show you some pictures of those. But what we need to do first is identify what are these underlying legal lots of record. This is what the RPD is used to address. These are legal parcels that have already been created by deed or certificate or some manner that's recognized by the Subdivision Map Act that makes them legal lots of record. They exist. They're there on the ground, sprinkled all over the county. You folks don't have, based on experience and talking to the planners just before I came down, South County doesn't have as many of these as the North County does. But you do have some. You do have some. What, based on experience, we're looking at maybe four times as many up in the North County, just as a real rough guesstimate. And the reason it's a rough guesstimate is because we don't know where all of these lots are. Yes, sir.
This, I think, is the critical thing about the entire ordinance, this statement here. What is a legal parcel? Now, I understand that there's two different levels of legal parcel. One is something that was in existence before 1890-something, and another one was recognized after about 1972. And to me, a legal lot is one that's recorded. And there's some argument around the county circles that it doesn't have to be recorded to be legal. Now, are you defining these as recorded lots or the other kind?
Both. The reason that this is left open-ended in the bottom here, or some other manner is recognized by the Subdivision Map Act, if it is considered, and in talking to some of the other groups, they get a little bit hung up on this issue, but I don't want you to get hung up on this. The important thing is to understand that if it's a legal lot, and let's say that you have several of these legal lots under your ownership, You can use the Rural Plan Development Ordinance to reconfigure those and establish lots that are inconsistent with your category's minimum parcel size, among other things, and I'll get into some of those details.
That's the crux of the whole matter, because a legal lot, if you do determine it the loose way, can be something a couple of farmers wrote on the back of a napkin in a saloon in 1880.
Right.
But then I think the Subdivision Map Act came in about 1890 or something like that. And isn't that the one that required them to be recorded?
It is that. It is.
And then the county recognizes something that about around 1970 something.
Right. Because of the Gardner case, I believe it is.
Yes, exactly.
Yes,
exactly.
Yes.
And they keep, every time I have a Board of Supervisors meeting, the last one, as a matter of fact,
right.
This came up about some properties that were
Santa Maria. That's right, down by Guadalupe.
Yeah.
Yes.
And Ovid thinks one thing, and a lot of other people think other things. In fact, the county attorney was opposite to Ovid's opinion.
Yes. Well, in fact, the board went against the county attorney's opinion on that.
Right.
Yes.
And so the important thing about this is, I think, you know, whether or not this should have an EIR, I think if it goes forward, it should have an EIR. There's no question about that. My question is whether it should go forward, and I don't think it should go forward unless legal is defined very tightly as a recorded lot.
So, you know, it's a good example that you bring up. When the board considered those lots down by the Guadalupe oil field a week or two ago or three weeks ago, what the staff was recommending was, we were saying that you had to process conditional certificates on them to make them legal. And the board came out in a different spot after hearing all of the presentation and the testimony. What they determined was, no, you don't. And so what the board did was they recognized those lots as legal lots. And so those lots, in that particular case, could then become the subject of use of the RPD ordinance as a process to reconfigure those.
John, in the last 3 months, the Board of Supervisors has rejected staff's definition of Gardner in every case.
I know.
So you got the Guadalupe, you got the one in San Miguel.
That's
correct. We have 17 parcels right across the street from us over here, Tri-W.
Yes.
All
I'm
of those
aware of that one also.
Did not have COCs and were still considered legal lots. So in that context, I think it's fair to say that
there is a pattern.
Any dotted line on anybody's map of whatever antiquity would, in fact,
that's a good, reasonable worst case to
be affected by
scenario this. There to consider. Yeah. Many of these underlying legal lots of record are substandard in size. They can't accommodate a well and a septic system because they're not big enough. They might be situated on the sides of a very steep hillside, so steep that it's unbuildable. They might be in the bottom of a riverbed. When they laid these things out, it appears that the guys that were laying them out didn't always go out in the field and look to see where they were. So they can be in some very awkward locations that are unbuildable. In effect, what the ordinance would do is allow you to move these around so that they can be buildable, change the size. These things, we've seen some of these that are, you know, bits of railroad right away that are recognized as a legal lot, hardly big enough to fit a house on, let alone a well and a septic system. So this ordinance would allow you to reconfigure those, create an open space parcel, and develop them. And that's one of the reasons I thought it was important to come and talk to you today, because really what we're talking about from your guys' perspective is this ordinance could result in more lots than currently are developable in the county, and therefore could result in more water use than the current inventory of lots will. And that, I think that really is the crux for this board.
John, you mentioned clustering. Are you going to get into that in further detail?
Yes, sir.
Okay,
I'll show you some pictures of that.
I'll wait.
The really difficult thing about these lots, as I mentioned before, is that we don't know where they all are. We don't know where they are necessarily until, say, a surveyor or somebody like that discovers them and then brings them to the county and says, look at this, I've got these legal lots that nobody knew about. So that makes it very difficult if we are going to do some high level of environmental review, say in an EIR, on this thing, because we don't know how many are out there, and we don't know where they all are. Very problematic, just to, for starters. Like I said, it'll apply in three categories. There we go. Agriculture, residential, rural, and rural lands. And I'm not real familiar with the land use categories that your district serves, but I would imagine that you have some of this. You have some, but you don't have a whole bunch.
We have a lot.
Do you have a lot?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So then this is a good thing for you to be considering today. What this ordinance would do, let's get into the mechanics of this thing. And obviously it applies to the underlying legal lots of record. It allows a reduction in the minimum parcel size requirements. No matter what category you're in, be it agriculture, rural lands, or the other one, you can take those lots either up or down to 2.5 acres for well and septic, if that's how you're going to serve your development, or you can go all the way down to 1 acre if you have community water. So you can go all the way down to one acre in the agriculture category, in the rural lands category, which are typically rural categories. Let's look at how it works for the different categories. It's different for the depending on which category you're in. For ag and residential rural, the resulting number of parcels that you could reconfigure would be equal to the number of existing underlying lots of record. So let's say you start out with 5, you wind up with 5 after your reconfiguration. And then those resulting 5 parcels would be allowed 2 primary residences each. That's in these two categories, ag and rural lands.
But John, that...
I'm sorry, I misspoke. It's ag and residential rural.
Yeah.
Yes, Mike.
That sounds very different from what would happen. And I'll give you an example. We have ag land out here. Well, the minimum parcel size is 300 acres.
Right.
Because it doesn't have good water and it has class 3 soil.
Right.
This would say you could divide that down to 2.5 acre parcels.
If, let's say, that on that subject property that you're talking about, someone discovered that there were 5 underlying legal lots of record. Nobody knew about those before, but deeds were discovered, and there were legal lots underlying that subject property that you're talking about.
Well, out that window, I can show you 100 acres that has over 20 of such lots.
There you go.
Underwater, okay. But they're in a floodplain.
Okay. But what the RPD could do with those is take those lots, move them out of the floodplain if there's area on that property that's out of the floodplain. It could reduce the parcel size to 2.5 or 1 acre size and then put the floodplain in an open space. Now, that makes sense. In some instances where you don't know what else to do with these things. I mean, do you want them to develop as is? It sounds like the example you're giving, they can't because they're in the floodplain. But that's not always the case. You might have a whole bunch of these things scattered out on, say, your first example on a piece of agricultural land. And then the question is, do you want them to develop in the existing configuration? The answer is usually no. And so that's what this committee was trying to get at, was a way to address this problem. My problem with this whole thing is they created a kind of a one size fits all. And so it might help in some instances, and I'll show you one of those. But in the majority of instances, what we found through the initial study process is it's going to result in significant impacts, and I'll talk about what those are. Moving along, Now, here in the rural lands land use category, if you're below the range of minimum parcel sizes, and everybody knows what I'm talking about when I say minimum parcel size in a land use category, right? Okay. If you're below the range, you're, in other words, your lot is substandard in size, your existing lot, then the number of lots would be equal to the number of existing underlying lots, same as the last example, and you'd be allowed two primary residences. To compare that now with this one, if you were within the range of minimum parcel sizes, the number of lots would be double the number of existing underlying lots, and you would get one primary residence on each of those. This is the one that poses some problems as far as CEQA goes. Let's look at it, let's look at some examples now. Here are 10 existing underlying legal lots of record. They're 10 acres each, and they're in the agricultural land use category. And we see this, when we see these things, we see oftentimes very awkward layouts. And this is, this is a conceptual diagram, but I tried to show it as a very awkward, long 10-acre parcels in the ag category. This is what you could accomplish then with the RPD. You could cluster nine of those into 2.5-acre residential lots, each with well and septic, and then create a 77.5-acre open space parcel. Again, you can see that in some cases there could be an advantage to something like this if you, let's say parcel 10, the ag parcel that's denoted there was prime soils. And you wanted to preserve that with your open space parcel and then cluster your lots off to the side. That open space parcel is a buildable parcel. You can build a house on that. I believe it's a 10,000 square foot, 20,000 square foot building envelope on the open space parcel.
Which under current Title 22, you can only have an ag support building, no residence, on the open parcel that's created by clustering.
Actually, you can have a buildable open space parcel. You can go either way on that. It depends on the project.
Isn't the open space parcel limited to 6,000 square feet?
I believe you're right. I believe it is 6,000 square feet.
Can you say here it grows to 10?
20,000.
Actually grows to 20.
Goes to 20,000.
Almost half acre.
Mike, I think what you're thinking about is then everything outside of that building envelope is put into open space under an open space agreement. Let's look at another example here. This one is 10 existing underlying lots of 4.5 acres each in the residential rural category. And there they all are in their awkward configurations. Here's what you could do with the RPD then and reconfigure those into 9 2.5-acre residential lots and a 22.5-acre open space parcel. And I tried to be realistic in doing in drawing this conceptual diagram. You can see the open space parcel then takes into account the riparian corridor with its associated riparian vegetation, and the idea is that you protect that area with that and allow development on the rest of the property.
What do you do when the original configuration of lots is in different ownerships? You can't accomplish this.
Well, you could if they
cooperate.
Exactly. Yes, exactly. Here is it's just a sticky button or something. I don't know. Yeah, I always try to point it at the screen, too. I've been doing that for years. Here are 10 existing underlying parcels of 20 acres each in the rural lands land use category. And here is what you could do with that. 19 parcels of 2.5 acres each and 152 acre open space parcel. Now that one was 10, remember, in the first place. Here's your existing configuration. And then here's what you wind up with, basically double the number of lots. There they are clustered on the left-hand side, and then an open space parcel on the right-hand side. This one is particularly problematic, and it's allowed by this proposed ordinance, doubling the number of lots. I think that's where your group might want to get involved.
But it really doesn't double. It really goes 20 times.
Let's talk about that. You know, one of the arguments that I received from the subcommittee, and I've met with the subcommittee several times and said, you know, there are problems with this thing. What the subcommittee said was, well, you know,
did you want to go back that far? I can.
No, I didn't.
Tell me where you want to be.
Let's go back one from there.
Yeah.
On each one of these parcels in the...
I'm sorry.
That's quite all right.
I can get us.
I know you can. I'm not worried. On each one of these parcels,
it's going on its own.
Yeah, for some reason. I wonder if the button might be...
Hand me that thing. I'll pick up that.
Stick this in your pocket.
Yeah.
We're all the way back to the start here now. Oh, I seem to have control. At least we have. Okay.
Stop,
and
stop, stop.
Let's see, right there. That's where I want to be. Okay. And you know, just use that pointer. Okay, I won't push that advance button. On each one of...
This way.
Bottom right, very bottom right.
Yeah, for some reason. You know what? I'm just going to skip this.
May have taken his last breath.
Maybe that is going. Maybe that's it. Yeah. On each one of these parcels, you would be allowed to have two primary residences. Mm-hmm. Okay?
Now.
That's what you're allowed now in the rural lands category. You're allowed to have two primary residences.
Is it two primary or one primary and one secondary?
Two primaries in the rural lands land use category.
Okay.
And that's what we're talking about right now. I want to try to get at what I thought was the logic, as it was explained to me by the TDC subcommittee. Two primaries on each one of these, 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12, and you can see you're going to add up to 20, okay? 20 primary residences total. And so what the group did was they said, well, if you can have 20 primary residences on a piece of property like this, or properties, then why don't we say you get 20 lots with one primary on each? That was the logic. Now, I'm here to tell you that properties like this do not develop with two primary residences on each parcel. In fact, I had my mapping and graphic guys do a countywide study, and they came up with a figure of about 3 or 4% of the properties in the county of San Luis Obispo develop with two primary residences. So what you're doing here is you're saying, well, gee, everybody's going to build two, so let's double the number of lots and limit it to one house. Well, in effect, what you've done is you doubled your inventory of lots in an area like this. You're not going to get two primaries on each of these. Probably for a long, long time, if ever. I don't know if any of you have ever tried to build a second primary, but getting financing from a bank is pretty near impossible unless you're well-to-do. So that was, I found fault in that logic of the subcommittee to allow the doubling of the number of lots simply based on the fact that, hey, you can get two primaries anyway. That wasn't an appropriate jump to make. And I think that based on a lot of the issue areas that I'm going to talk about, this particular component of the ordinance is very problematic. Okay, Michael, if I could have the next slide. That's that, of course, resulting configuration. Here's one. Here's one that shows 14 underlying lots on an existing ag parcel. And you know, some of these aren't that far off. I mean, you know, you might, if this were prime soils, you know, you're creeping up around your minimum parcel size, and you probably, maybe not that one, but you might not want to do much with these guys. You may want to leave them as is, rather than, and Mike, if you would go to the next slide, rather than do this. I mean, essentially what you're doing here is you're then using your existing lots to cluster down here, creating an open space parcel, and there's that 20,000 square foot building site. In some cases, this might be appropriate, but I would submit to you that in most cases, it is not appropriate to do this. To create 13 clustered parcels out in the hinterlands on an ag parcel in the middle of nowhere with a lack of services, a lack of emergency and fire police, that sort of thing, it's not appropriate.
Well, in addition, the language in the proposed ordinance doesn't call this a residence. It says a residential facility. So it could be a dude ranch, a convention center.
Anything that would be allowed in that land use.
All kinds of things. Which means you're really losing a lot of ag land.
Right. You could. Well, and the other thing that comes up, I'll jump to this point, is that you're really creating quite a bit of ag residential interface here for conflict. Mm-hmm. And that's usually a mistake we find. Mm-hmm. Let's see, one more slide.
Can I just make an assumption on that?
You bet.
My assumption would be that the open spaces would continue in ag.
Yes.
And that the clustered lots down there would be operated by probably 1 acre in size or greater.
They could be 1 acre or 2.5, yeah, between
so,
one and
so yeah. they would have a septic system.
That's right.
To do it, and then probably a mutual water company to provide the water system.
If they were 1 acre, if they each had wells, they'd have to be a minimum
because
of 2.5.
They have to have community water, they would have to 2 acres.
Exactly. That's right. That's right.
And a mutual water company qualifies as a community water system.
Yes.
Except we already have an ag clustering ordinance?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. A clustering ordinance for RR and RL.
We have a minor cluster now that came out
so
of the ag and open
that
space.
That already exists. Yeah. This goes beyond that.
Yeah. It does. This goes way beyond that. And yeah. I'll talk a little bit about, as I sum up, how far I think it goes beyond conventional standards for subdivision. I don't know if any of you recall when they changed the law on lot line adjustments. And now it's 4. If you adjust more than 4 lots, you have to do a tract map. And if you have to do a tract map, you're subject to minimum parcel size for your land use category. So if you're in that, if you're in Mr. Wynn's example, the first one, and it's agriculture, let's say the minimum is 320 acres, that's your lot size. Okay? This is an end run around that change in the law where it allows you basically take as many parcels as you want and adjust them through a lot line adjustment process. You're no regard for the minimum parcel size in that category. I mean, look what's happening. These are going down to 1 or 2.5 acre parcels, where without this, if you were going to do a lot line adjustment, you would be subject to the minimum parcel size in the ag category, which 320 acres or all the way down to 20 acres soils. So that's kind of what's going on here. Michael, if I could get the next slide. Here are some of the issue areas that we identified as having there could be a potential significant impact in some of these areas. There are other categories that didn't get onto this list, and water, of course, is one of them. The negative declaration that was a misspeak for sure. The initial study that was prepared for this did identify a significant impact with regard to water supply. And what the initial study basically said was that It could affect the availability of water for natural resources, agriculture, and existing development. And of course, that is because these projects would then compete for groundwater, and they could compete, obviously, and I think you guys have had a situation like this, they could compete with a district such as yourself, whether just outside or depending on the location. So we did identify water as a significant impact. I didn't put it on this list for the Board of Supervisors because it wasn't as severe of a significant impact as these were.
It was still probably class one, though.
Yeah.
Probably the biggest one that you don't have on there is land use.
And land use isn't really considered a physical effect on the environment. It's we consider it, but these are actual physical effects on the environment. Land use is more of a policy, plans and policy effect. It's discussed in EIRs, but it isn't discussed as an issue area like this. Some of these are obvious. Aesthetics, with that previous example, if you allow a bunch of 12 to 20 acre parcels in the ag category to pull all the development into a corner, and you do that out in the rural area, you're changing the character of that area. All of us know from our drives out in the country that you don't see homes out in the agricultural areas, 13 or 20 of them, all clustered in one spot. This ordinance would allow that to happen all over the county, and it would affect the character and obviously the aesthetics out in those areas. Agriculture, I talked about the ag and residential interface, the conflict that develops there. All of these ag, air quality, public services, and traffic and circulation. Those issues were all referred to the various agencies that have the expertise in those areas. Ag commissioner is dead set against this proposed ordinance. They think it's bad for agriculture. It's their opinion that it will result in significant impacts in a variety of areas, including minimum parcel size, and the conflict that I talked about. Air quality, it was referred to the Air Pollution Control District. They have a hard time with this thing because what it's going to do is it's going to make these parcels that may not be developable now, developable, and developable out in the rural areas, so that you're going to have obviously significant emissions from vehicles going back and forth to work. Biological resources, when you double the number of lots, you obviously double the disturbance in an area, and that, as you can all see, could have a significant effect when it comes to listed plant species, animal species, that sort of thing. Public services, CDF came out against this. They don't like the fact that we're going to make rural areas more developable, and they're going to have to provide that emergency service out in those areas. They think it would be a significant impact to their ability to service those areas. Traffic and circulation, Public Works came out against the RPD ordinance and said that, you know, a lot of those rural roads, there aren't funds to maintain those, particularly when they start, when they begin being used by folks that now go out in these rural areas and develop homes and then drive back and forth to work or whatnot.
For the Board of Supervisors meeting where this was considered, from the minutes, I only saw one person who spoke who was not against it. There were about 20 against it, and one person was for it.
Yes, that's true. I believe there were two people, and one of them was a gentleman that was on the subcommittee. His name's Tom Vaughn, surveyor in North County. I believe he spoke in favor of it. And also an attorney that's somewhat associated with the committee, Roy Ogden is his name. He spoke in favor also that day on June 25th.
Now, when they served on these committees, did they have to declare conflict of interest?
I don't know the answer to that. I don't know. and nobody has asked me that yet.
And can't this...
I'll tell you more.
Can this be accomplished without an ordinance?
No. And the reason it can't be accomplished without an ordinance, Mr. Trotter, is because of what we were talking about when the law changed on lot line adjustments. Now you can only reconfigure four. And even if you use the current lot line adjustment process that says you can only reconfigure four, you've got to make a finding that what you wind up with is equal to or better than what you started out with. This doesn't have a finding like that.
Seems to me that changing the number of lot line adjustments, with the mechanics of that would be far easier than such a broad...
Yeah, the trouble though is that it's state law that changed on lot line adjustments.
Yeah.
It wasn't our ordinances that county ordinances that changed, it was state law. And so if we wanted to go back and reverse that, that would be significantly harder than trying to put in a substitute ordinance that would kind of accomplish the same thing.
Are other counties studying the same process?
No, we did a little bit of research and we found that nobody has come up with anything like this yet. Up north near Napa, I think it's Sonoma County, has a process where if you discover a bunch of underlying legal lots of record on your property, you're required to combine those to meet the minimum parcel size of your category, your land use category that you're in. That's kind of the extreme over here. This is on this end of the spectrum. And what the staff is, what I'm trying to get across to the board is we need to wind up somewhere here in the middle.
You think what this would have done to the Santa Margarita Ranch?
Oh, yes, that's a good example. Right.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. If they had tried to adjust more than four parcels there today, they'd be subject to minimum parcel size in the agricultural land use category. And, you know, on that ranch, there are various minimums because of the ag use, but for the grazing, 320, for the grapes, 30, 40 acre minimums, rather than some of the smaller lots that they wind up with. Yeah. I'll move along. I'm almost done. Maybe, Michael, if I could have the next slide. Here's another picture. This shows maybe a little more realistically how these things can be just plopped down like this on a lot that we, an agricultural piece of property. You discover these little pieces like this, these little legal lots like this. This one then, here's the point of this one. This is kind of like your one in the creek. Only this isn't just in the floodplain, this is in the creek. So here's a parcel that's not buildable today. You couldn't build a house on that parcel, it's in the creek bed. This ordinance will allow you to take that parcel out of the creek bed and bring it over here, cluster it with your other parcels, and there's your 20,000 square foot building site on the open space. So that's why I'm making the point that this results in an increase in the number of developable parcels in the county.
Can they also transfer development rights to even increase this even more? Just curious whether or not.
That consideration hasn't been given yet, whether the TDC could be combined with the RPD. It's not part of the ordinance currently. I would imagine if this thing goes forward, that'll be a discussion about whether you can combine RPD and TDC and work something out that way. I think that the two of them coming together like that, and this is my own professional opinion, could be disastrous.
You bet.
Yeah.
Thanks for bringing that up, John. I was just thinking, boy, if you could designate this as a receiving site.
Yeah. Imagine
RPD.
Imagine what could happen out in an agriculture land use category.
Yeah.
If I could have the next slide, Michael, I'm gonna. This is a real life example. This is Whitley Gardens right here. This is the Village Reserve line around Whitley Gardens. This is the eastern edge of Whitley Gardens. And as you keep going out towards Shandon, there's this section here. And these, I believe there's 32 of these, 10-acre existing underlying legal loss of record. So here's a real-life example that we know about of this problem in the county up in North County.
Are they recorded?
They are ready to go. And guess what? They have been purchased by Kelly Gerhardt and a partner. He came in with grading permit applications for each of those. I believe for approximately 9 or 10 of them up here in this area. We said, whoa, wait a minute. There could be various impacts as a result of this. This is a grading permit that's subject to CEQA because there are slopes greater than 10% on this property. And so when that happens, we get to look at the whole gamut of things, from traffic circulation to aesthetics. And we said, you've got problems with aesthetics, you've got problems with getting out here onto Highway 46 East. And we said, we think that you need to do an environmental impact report. Kelly, he was successful in avoiding that by reducing the amount of grading for these so that he didn't trigger a grading permit. So what we're going to see shortly are homes popping up on some of these front nine of these. And I tell you that because I don't think the ordinance is a good idea, I want to make sure you understand what a problem these things are. We are about to feel this, all of us, when we take that drive out 46 in a big way. There are going to be, and all of you are familiar with this area. I mean, this is basically agricultural land. Once you get past Whitley Gardens, it's open country. And now we're going to have homes on these 10-acre lots popping up. And they didn't have to do CEQA. They didn't have to process grading permits. But they're going to be there. And so it's a problem, and that's why I show this slide. It's an existing problem. It's a problem that's not going to go away. Is RPD the answer? No, I don't think so. But we've got to do something about it. What could you do with RPD on this thing? Well, one thing you could do is if you owned, as most of you know, this goes up, and then there's a ridge, and you go over the ridge. What you could conceivably do if you own this section is you could move all of these over that ridge and out of sight. Now, that doesn't necessarily take care of your circulation problems here getting onto and off of Highway 46 East, but from an aesthetics point of view, let's just look at that. You could move this out of the public viewshed.
But that whole area has water depressions, pumping depressions in certain parts of that area.
Right. And this is going to exacerbate that. There's no two ways about it.
Excuse me.
Certainly.
I heard that Shandon was having prohibition areas for septics.
Only in the town. Just in the town.
Just in the town.
Yeah. Shandon needs a sewer. It's high time Shandon has a sewer, and that's one of the reasons that they don't want to allow a whole bunch more septic systems out there. They're starting to contaminate their groundwater.
Yeah, their soil.
So, one more slide, Michael, I think. This was the recommendation that I made to the Board of Supervisors that we require an EIR for the Rural Plan Development Ordinance because of the potential for it to result in significant impacts. And what I told the Board was that although, this ordinance does is it maximizes creativity. I mean, it basically gives you the green light, go out and reconfigure your existing underlying lots just about any way you want, but it does that in a fashion that substantially deviates from our conventional development and subdivision standards. It so deviates that it's going to allow, I think, configurations that we don't want, that aren't appropriate in a lot of industry land use categories where you could use this. And it's obviously going to result in a number of significant environmental impacts. So that was the recommendation we made to the board back in June of last year. And like I said, when I started, the board directed me then to go out and talk to everybody and bring back your opinions of this ordinance. And so far, I've done about, I held a workshop at the library, and all of the advisory groups were invited to that. But then what happened was, is each advisory group called me and said, do you think that you could come and talk to us individually? And so I've been doing that now for the last 3 or 4 months. And I've got 4 more to go. Shandon is next Wednesday night. I think the RAC is Wednesday. Ag Liaison on the 27th of this month, I think. And then I'll be going back to the Board of Supervisors.
Can I ask a question? Has the regional board been involved in this at all? I think, in fact, they would have an interest in, I know they've had an interest on some of the subdivisions out here that have not, the densities are way from this, but.
You know, they probably would, John, and that's a good idea. You know, if the board did require an EIR, they would certainly get a notice of preparation and we'd pull them in, but we didn't refer it to the regional board as part of this initial study process. I think I'm sure if we were going to do an EIR, if the board decides they want to fund an EIR, then we'd pull the regional board in.
We could invite them to your presentation at the RAC.
Okay.
And
sure.
The other thing that just seems, and this is, you know, you're asking for a policy decision.
Right.
But the other thing that seems to me that is, at least for the Mesa, you know, there are going to be areas, and of course, my interest is the same as the board's, is water, that there are going to be areas that are going to be unique throughout the county.
Right.
I think there's going to be some areas, although it's kind of hard to imagine where, these days, where there's going to be, you know, adequate resources, but clearly there's going to be areas like the Mesa where the resource capacity is clearly at issue, and you know the Board of Supervisors on the Mesa has pretty much directed staff, although it seems to be a slow-moving train, to come up with development restrictions on the Mesa that say, you don't develop without supplemental water.
Right.
I mean, that's what we understand to be the clear policy direction. And here it looks to me like you are looking, and the other one is no mutual water companies. In fact, they've turned down two developments that have proposed mutual water company, one maybe, a mutual water company, well actually a split one, 1.5, and saying, you know, that you have to connect to an overlying, or sorry, a purveyor.
Right.
One that does, so because they don't want, and we don't want, these mutual water companies, because they have superior overlying rights, or at least they have the great argument that they have superior overlying rights vis-a-vis a governmental agency providing water. So it just seems to me, you know, having a broad-based ordinance that applies countywide doesn't take into the resource limitations of various areas within the county.
And that's my opinion also.
You know,
you said it better than I could. That's right.
I was thinking that doing an EIR, it is meaningless because the EIR would have to address every ag parcel that could be
right
subject to this and what the particular environmental impact would be on that.
You really
site.
Wouldn't be able to do it. And
no.
And you wouldn't be able to do it right out of the chute because we, like I said earlier, we don't know where they all are. We don't know how many there are. And so I've had this question come up several times, including at the board hearing, and really if the county were to do an EIR on this thing, what we would have to do is look at some specific examples, maybe the real life example that you saw on the screen, and try to come up with real specific criteria for doing this, from minimum parcel size to mitigations across the board for all of the issue areas. I mean, it's a huge job. The way the ordinance is written right now, it doesn't get at any of the things that I've talked about as far as the issue areas goes. It just leaves them out there. Mm-hmm. And the members of the TDC subcommittee argue that, well, on any given Thursday at the Planning Commission or Tuesday at the board, they'll make the right decisions that take into account those resources and those areas in the ordinance where it's lacking any direction or criteria. And my response to that is obviously, well, sure, they'll do a great job too. But my real response is that I can't issue a negative declaration with this ordinance being so open-ended, because it has then the potential, and that's all it needs to be in my line of work, the potential to result in a significant impact on the environment. And that's when I have to step up and say, wait a minute, if you really want to go through with this thing, we need to do an environmental impact report.
John?
Okay, well, in the interest of sort of moving this along, at this point I'd like to open it to public comment on this particular item. Okay, seeing none, then we'll bring it back to the board. And Mr. Nguyen, I believe.
I would urge you to rethink your assumption that there's a lot of these in North County and not so many in South County.
That's,
I think the entire county is riddled with subdivisions.
What I might have misunderstood. What I meant to say was that based on our experience with finding these, there are four times as many in North County as South County. That's not to say that you don't have as many that have not been discovered.
I don't know the real numbers.
That's just based on what we know.
But if you think WASNA, if you think out Highway 166
right.
to the Heron-Kern County line,
right.
thousands of
them. See, and I'm just speaking to the ones that we've had experience with that have come through the door. I have these underlying lots. Yeah. What can I do with them? We find that there are far more. We find that there were a number of them that were created up in east of Paso, like the mm-hmm. real-life example I showed mm-hmm. back in the almond heyday. They were small almond ranchettes that they created for sale mm-hmm. that nobody ever bought, nobody ever developed. And they just kind of faded out of view until somebody discovers the deeds.
Yeah.
So, thank you for letting me take the time.
So, just to sum this up, you would like some type of response from this board. I think that that's what you would like. You'd like to have it in writing.
If I may.
And then, what would be the time frame to get that letter that you would that would be most desirable for yourself to respond?
I originally anticipated going back to the board in March, but I have had so many requests lately to come and do this talk that I'm really putting that off until probably the end of April. So if you wanted, I could give you another month. I don't know how often your board meets.
Twice a month?
Twice a month. So you could have another month if you wanted to deliberate this further at another time.
Well, usually how this works is just anecdotally, staff proposes a letter.
Oh, okay.
And hopes that they get 3 votes. Usually we get 5.
Okay. That would be just fine, and within a month would be great.
Because I assume it'd be better coming from the board as opposed from staff.
Sure.
I feel that this should be a letter that comes from the board of directors of the NCSD.
Would it be helpful to our staff if somebody on the board drafted you a letter?
Do
you want to start with it?
Well, I think what would be helpful is that each of you articulate a perspective so we can write it down so that to the extent that we can get it, in the flow of the letter, would be important to staff so that we at least have a starting point.
Okay.
So, Michael, I mean, you're the one that's going to be describing this well.
Just one last quick thing, if I might, Mr. President, and that is that the letters that I've received so far from the advisory groups are very brief. An example of the one I received from Templeton simply says, the Templeton Advisory Group strongly recommends that you discontinue processing of the Rural Plan Development Ordinance. It can be as simple as that.
Aren't there really two issues here? One is, do you do an EIR, authorize the money for an EIR, and
right.
the other is, do you just kill the project
That's
right
correct.
Now?
That's
so
correct.
So there's really two components to it.
There's really two options.
Yeah, if you kill the project, you don't have to do the EIR.
That's correct. There's actually three options. You could recommend to the board that they direct staff to issue a negative declaration. Yeah. Third option. I hadn't talked about that one this morning.
Good.
Thank you.
No way. When would staff like to have inputs from the board?
Well, maybe
you want to do it right now, or
right now if we can get it. I think in what Mr. Nall is talking about here is maybe give an example of short, clear direction. What we're hoping is to hand them a letter that's going to go we're going to hand them a letter. It'll go in their board packet and be read to the board.
Okay. So who would like to start with their thoughts, Mr. Wynn?
Okay. I would like to. That would say something that we simply do. That they stop processing this application entirely. And should they decide to go ahead, it definitely would need a full EIR, which would include, among other things, a countywide determination of water supplies and where they're located or not. And it would be an exhaustive or complete inventory of all antiquated subdivisions or other parcel lines.
Mrs. Worsing?
Thank you. I think it should be completely discouraged and not to give any idea of how they may go, like with an EIR or whatever, just to kill it.
Well, I think we all agree that they shouldn't go ahead. But if they do decide to go ahead, we want to have some voice as to what they do next.
Then
we don't want to give them
back.
A negative deck.
Which I sort of feel they probably will. Put their toe in the water.
I don't
Hopefully
know.
Hopefully there's a great white out.
Well, they don't.
I think they have two votes.
They wouldn't do a negative deck. They'd go on a lawsuit.
Well, they couldn't do a negative
deck. Well, they could. They could do anything they want. They want a lawsuit.
Okay, Mr. Eby.
I think we ought to recommend that they just kill the processing of the ordinance. Hmm.
Mr. Trotter?
I have no comments.
Okay. Well,
I don't see a need for this.
Well, one, I feel just as Mr. Nall put it very delightfully, can it? One, but if they do an EIR, then the EIR needs to cover every site and all the site specific impacts. Be it environment, meaning biology, resources, aesthetics, impact on the surrounding lands, compatible with community, So in other words, they're going to be preparing an EIR for every piece of ag land that has this kind of zoning in it. And that's what they need to do.
I would just suggest that the letter include, especially for the Mesa, in light of your recent board actions regarding
good point.
Mutual water companies developing that are competing directly with a scarce resource, and the idea that no further development occur on the Mesa without connecting to supplemental water. Those types of policies that they've already concluded as being valuable policies. Now, they haven't really implemented them, but sometimes when they're reminded of things that they've done in the past, it sort of leads a light that they can follow to where they should go in the future. And the other thing that just occurred to me, and I'll try and be quiet, is, we have this resource management system. you know, and I think when you sort of take a look at that resource management system, it seems to me if they have a severity level 2 or greater, they are, maybe it's contrary to their resource management system about, you know, there's, you get to severity level 2, and almost all the water supplies in the county are at severity level 2. There are implementation guides, policy guidelines within the RMS that, that this seems a little bit contradictory to from, and we have a lot of severity 3s. I mean, you know, at least on the books as a declaration, if not implementation, a severity level 3s, would seem to have a, this seems to contradict a little bit as far as their water.
Very good point, Mr. Sykes. It is in contradiction to the current resource levels assigned in some of the locations. So does staff feel they have enough meat there to slap the county up alongside the head? And possibly could we get a draft of this letter?
We'll have a draft letter on the next agenda.
Board meeting?
Mm-hmm.
Great.
Not a problem.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Mr. Nall. I appreciate your presentation, and when I read through it, I just hit my head. It's the first step to just red tile roofs as far as the eye can see.
You might consider throwing this in there, too, in, the, in your letter. The estimate here is for the EIR, if it's required, $200,000 to $250,000, you might suggest that that's woefully inadequate for the job that need, would need to be done. It's probably $1 million EIR to find all the antiquated subdivisions.
Yeah, yeah, that's a very good point. And, you know, I was slapped around on that estimate early on with this, and I actually put on the transmittal letter to the board that an estimate of $200,000 to $250,000. And you're right, Mr. Eby, that is woefully inadequate for the kind of EIR that would need to be done on something like this. If anybody's interested, the last thing I wanted to add was this staff report that went to the board in June is available on the county's website. If you just go to board agendas, and you can pull up the whole thing if you'd like.
And the minutes of that meeting are very instructive, too, to, as to what the public said.
Right.
Okay, well, thank you, Mr. Nall.
Thank you.
I need to take a break.
I think we need to, we'll wait till Mr. LeBrun sits back down. Since we are somewhat getting close to lunch, at which time we could then go and do that closed session. Two items. I had sort of thought we could do that during lunch to move things on. Let's confirm that, then we can take like a 10-minute just kind of a break, and then or 15-minute, and then get our sandwiches and forge ahead with item M. Pretty soon we're going to run out of the alphabet, John.
We have sandwiches.
Okay. So let's go ahead. We'll take a real 15-minute break and reconvene back here.
Well,
5 minutes, 11.
We have just, can I make a quick suggestion?
Yeah.
We have one member in the audience, and I just want to make sure if Greg's going to stick around if he wants to comment on public comment on closed session or any agenda item.
Well, the one that I was interested in is 5-4.
The Pomo San Marino waterline intertie in subcommittee.
It seems to me it's a quick item, and Greg has something to comment on. If he's to come back after lunch, is that what the alternative would
be? For Mr. Nestor to comment on it at this point in time. If he's wanting to find results, you know, 929-6710. But,
well, and I don't even have anything to say to that. I'm just curious as to what the board was considering
all this area.
If you wouldn't mind, it'll be an ad hoc committee to review our admin draft EIR on the project, along with all the other comments coming from board members, and bringing this then to a draft version, such that it can be then put out to the public for real review. And my thought, since it's my option to appoint the members, it would be Mr. Eby and Mr. Wynn.
We're gonna go over the EIR, review it.
Yeah.
That's what we're gonna do.
They're gonna.
Prior to the public release, we're just gonna essentially fact check it.
Yeah, but they're gonna take my comments and read them and laugh and have a good time and stuff like that.
No.
But that's basically what the group is gonna do, is just move it from the admin draft to a public draft phase a little quicker. So, but we are looking forward to your comments on it. It makes wonderful fireside reading.
Okay.
It'll put you to sleep very quickly. So, let's take a break. Get some lunch. Yeah, we'll get some lunch for yourself and we'll go from there. That way we can down.
Board will adjourn to closed session. Discuss two separate items. One is public employee release resignation. This is pursuant to Government Code Section 54957. And then there's a tort liability claim pursuant to Government Code Section 54956.95. This is the claim of the state of Roberto Hernandez. And this is the claim against the Tacoma Community Service District.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Seitz. At this point, we will go into closed session.
And we're recording.
Okay, well, thank you very much for coming back into open session. Mr. Seitz, could you please report out?
Yes, those? Mr. President, members of the board, and the audience, although the record should reflect that the audience has long since gone. We did adjourn to closed session approximately 10 minutes to 12 to discuss two items that were listed on the agenda. One was the public employee release resignation, Government Code Section 54957. We regret to announce that on a 5-0 vote, the Board of Directors did accept the resignation of its General Manager, Michael LeBrun, effective May 19th, 2006. Liability claim, Government Code Section 54956.95. This is the estate of Roberto Hernandez Sr. It's a claim against the Napomo Community Services District. The board on a 5-0 vote rejected that claim and instructed legal counsel to provide appropriate notice. That concludes the report out of closed session.
Okay, well, thank you, Mr. Seitz. The board in closed session, I believe, also decided to have the president activate the personnel ad hoc committee and appoint directors to serve upon for the purposes of developing the roadmap from here forward with regards to providing a general manager.
Right. I believe that it'd be my suggestion, Mr. President, that you do appoint the ad hoc committee. It'd also be my suggestion that when the ad hoc committee report is complete, depending on the timing, that you either call a special session of the Board of Directors to hear that report if it is complete prior to the next board meeting. That you make the appointment and you set the report for a special meeting. If that report is completed, let's say by, this is Wednesday.
The next regular meeting is 2 weeks from today, so really.
Yeah, the next regular meeting's on the 8th.
Right, so if you're prepared to make the report or have the report prepared by next Tuesday, then I would suggest that you set a special meeting with a 24-hour notice to hear that report so that we can keep moving along.
Okay.
Well, thank you, Mr. Seitz. And with that...
You make the appointment without board concurrence.
Okay, I can make the appointments. We do have an ad hoc personnel committee, and I'd like to appoint Mrs. Worsing and myself to that committee. And we do have our marching orders, and we'll get together and meet and put pencil to paper. So with that...
What is the purpose of the ad hoc committee?
We will be... We will be providing the roadmap to get from here to a permanent general manager, including job description, GM qualities we're looking for.
Mike, what I was searching for is, are you going to do anything with the interim management assignment? Is this committee going to do anything with that?
I didn't believe we were charged with that.
Right, just for information.
Now, that may change, depending on response we get from those people we're looking for to jump into that.
So it's permanent replacement you're looking into?
Yeah, right now we're just looking for the permanent, but we may have to look for an interim also. Yeah. Mrs. Worsing, please.
Mr. LeBrun is going to call, contact Mr. Carter.
Correct. I don't think we want to. Yeah, we don't want to make some personal contact.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Okay, well, thank you. And with that, we'll move to item number I2, which is an annual update of the director bylaws. And Mr. Seitz said this would be extremely short.
Thank you, Mr. President, members of the board. What we did at the last board meeting, we went through kind of a detailed analysis of the latest changes to the government code that apply to community services districts, and then talked about how we would change the bylaws. And what we have presented the board is what we call a redline version of your existing bylaws with the corrected changes. Now, we also made in here some technical, probably using this word wrong, linguistic changes, because dangling modifiers, etc. Those are pretty evident. But what I tried to do is to reflect on the government code section on your administrative draft or your red line draft of the code sections that we discussed at the prior meeting that related to the change. And so just going through with the major changes, and I'm looking at the red line version. If you take a look at preparation of minutes and maintenance of tapes, you'll see that this is pursuant, you'll see 4.2 was added. Minutes of the Board of Directors shall record the aye and no votes taken by members of the board for the passage or denial of all ordinances, resolutions, or motions. That's government code section, the new government code section 61045 in print D. So I try to make a reference in here. Of course, when you adopt it, you're not going to be adopting the red line version. You'll be adopting the other ones. I did add at section 5.2, we're at page 4. This is right out of the government code. It says, under directors, members of the board of directors shall exercise their independent judgment on behalf of the interest of the entire district, including the residents, property owners, and public as a whole. And that's government code section. I'm not going to repeat these anymore, but you'll see it right there. It's taken from 61042 in print C. I did add a new section 7, the authority of the general manager. I just thought it would be helpful. This is right out of the government code section. We're not making things up here. We're just plagiarizing. Made it clear, 7.4 makes it clear, supervision of finances. The only one that I really had questions on is, if you take a look at section 9, I kept the $50. You know, it's $100 for regular meetings and special meetings. I kept the $50. I think you're entitled to $100, you know, if that's the way you want to go. But I did make for standing committee
or an ad hoc committee meetings. That seemed to be the direction that we had at our last ones. And then I put in section 9.3 that says if a board of directors comes to a meeting, gets it on the agenda, talks to the general manager, gets it appropriately agended on the meeting, as pertaining to district business pursuant to the new regulations, if the directors approve it, then they can be entitled to the 100 days compensation. But this is quite a hurdle to be jumped, a gauntlet. You know, first of all, you're going to have to know about that you want this 72 hours in advance of a regular meeting. So whatever you want the 100 days for is going to have to be out into the future a fair amount of time and get it on the agenda.
But if it's on the agenda as a topic anyway, if the topic is to discuss, come up with a position on level 3, for example, with the Board of Supervisors?
Yes, I think that would work.
Then whether or not you authorize somebody to get paid $100 to go to the Board of Supervisors could be done extemporaneously at that point.
I think so.
Because it was an agenda item.
I think so, yes, absolutely. Yeah.
Well, and then 9.3, for example, you would know ahead of time, for example, a RAC meets the first Wednesday of every month. Mm-hmm. And I'm assuming that Ed will step into that, although...
I'm not going to take $100 for it.
I'm just saying it's your choice whether to take it or not, but that would be covered.
But if you would step into the position of the representative.
Yeah. Okay, so Wayne, I put that in there. I think I had it right, but it has to be board approved. It has to be 3 affirmative votes.
Right.
And so the motion would be, for example, RMS 3 level 2. The motion would be, I'd hope, something along these lines. We instruct the general, the president, the vice president, whoever it is, to attend the Board of Supervisors meeting, and that pursuant to our rules and regulations section blank, I believe it's appropriate to pay them for their participation because they're going to have to prep. I mean, you can make all the little statements.
Yeah, I just had one item as long as we're sitting there on 9.3. It says on the second sentence, or the second line from the bottom, delivers a written report to the Board of Directors.
Right.
Okay, and if you jump over to 10.4.
Yep, that's different.
It says shall provide brief report.
Yeah, but this is reimbursement for a director's out-of-pocket expenses. It's not paid comp. It's not paid compensation.
Well, so what I'm saying is, in one place you want a written report, in the other place you want a brief report.
Right, and that's the way the code sections are written. I didn't make this stuff up. I noticed the.
Because I thought maybe we would make that read brief, written, or oral report.
We can't do that on director compensation. We can clearly do it under director reimbursement.
Yeah, that's
okay.
What
we can do that.
I thought maybe 10.4 we shall provide brief, written, or oral reports.
Okay.
Because that way it just makes it easier to understand.
Okay.
One says, boy, you'll provide a written report that's like War and Peace. And the other one says, you know, you can tell us. And you say, well, you know, it wasn't too bad. It was a pretty good meeting.
Okay.
So, okay. Thank you, Mr. Sykes. That's the only thing I had on
this. Okay. Please note that 10.3, I want to make sure I emphasize this to the board, that we're going to be required, and I hope Lisa can, or Donna, who's ever going to do this, can get right to it, that we have a prepared expense report. I'm sure you can, if you can't find it,
it's
that's 10 days, I said 10 calendar days. Mm-hmm. So, you know, basically a week and a half, you need to get that report in. It does require your receipts. So, you know, if you're going to get, if you expect reimbursement. Now, generally speaking, I know this district pays for the lot. I think they pay for the lodge. I don't know how they do it, quite frankly. I know they pay for the meetings that you want to sign up for.
Lodging, meals, seminar fees.
Well, yeah, but just remember, the meals is a different, it's a different thing here. It's $40 max per day.
Up to $40 a day.
And believe me, this is very conservative. I mean, I have other agencies that are much larger than that, just so that you know that that's a very conservative policy statement.
I want to back off from that a little bit. At least when I was in aerospace, you were allowed up to $10 for breakfast and up to $10 for lunch and up to $20 for dinner. However, you did only charge the actual cost of the meal.
This per diem is not said that way.
Okay, okay, then that makes it perfectly clear. That you get $40 even though you spent McDonald's.
Yeah, if you went, if you
buy $49 for the
if
whole
you
day.
Thought
if you haven't paid the full price for that McDonald's meal when you paid the money, you got to deal with the health effects of that. Eating $40 a day when you're on the road at one of these seminars.
Okay, I just want to make it clear because we were allowed up to, but right. We only charged.
But sort of remember this when you think about that. I know that that's, you know, it's going to be something that, you know. Our policies state that we believe that it's healthy when you go to these meetings and go to these classes that you interact with the participants.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, so my view of it is, you know, even though, you know, getting a McDonald's cheese egg sandwich is good and you save the district money, you know, ultimately it may be costing the district money. Because if you could have had the same breakfast for $7.50 or $10 with a group of people with similar problems where you're discussing a resolution and you bring it back to the board, that can be much more valuable than the $4.50 you saved by walking by yourself down to some, you know, hamburger. Yeah, I just want to bring that to your attention.
Yeah, I just wanted to get the clarification. Yeah. That this was just 40, it wasn't actual.
Right, and then, so what staff is recommending, that there is no public here today, so if you have any further questions, you ask them, we'll try to respond. We will make that one revision, the staff's recommendation that you adopt the resolution with that one correction that the president has made.
I move that we adopt the revised bylaws as amended by the president.
Second.
We have a second for Mr. Wynn. This would be resolution 2965. Yeah.
Judge Eady?
Yes.
Judge Wynn?
Yes.
Judge Worsley?
Yes.
Yes. Thank you. Item E3 is a conservation landscape subcommittee activation. That's a ad hoc committee, mm-hmm. as I recall. And,
yes.
Mr. Wynn would be the chairperson, and I would be his member.
And when would we expect the report to come back? It's just like a report that would be returned. One of the responsibilities of an ad hoc committee is to have a reporting date. Now, it can be within the next 90 days, but this has to have something.
And I've put down a date there just as a date, but it doesn't have to be that date. I will say we have a conservation coordinator on board, and she's running, and
good.
And which is great. The work looks very good. May, the middle of May is Water Awareness Week, and one of the first projects she has on my desk, and it's ready to roll, and we're gonna keep it moving forward, is a poster contest with local high school, try to get some artwork developed locally, and try to get, you know, the advertising that comes along with having a contest. So I think getting this ad hoc committee up and meeting with the conservation coordinator at the earliest opportunity and reporting back to the board, at least with a status update, and then ultimately what we need to come back to the board with for approval is a conservation program, the program itself. She's also starting to lay down, you know, the principal components of a program. That's where we really need this ad hoc committee to get right to work, make sure we're in the right direction with the board's looking for.
A lot of materials that we could share.
That would be wonderful.
I also...
I started this at one time.
I also discover in chatting with her, though, that she's very much enamored with the notion of Earth Day.
Well, that's in May, I believe, isn't it?
April.
It's not on my calendar.
Well,
don't get the offer.
Then you must have a foreign calendar.
No, I don't.
Mr. Wynn. I don't have it on mine.
Mine says Anno Domini. It's not a pagan calendar.
No, I said foreign, not pagan. I don't have Earth Day on mine either, but...
Good. I think it's in April, actually.
I believe it is April 22nd, something like that. But in any event, as far as projects come
yeah.
through, I think.
Okay. Yeah.
Can I make a suggestion to this committee? You can do with it what you want.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what a flyer costs in our mail, but you might want to mention that we've got this position now and that we've got a new conservation effort and, you know, whatever your committee comes up with.
I've got two draft flyers on my desk that are markups set. She's, you know, graphics design person, so we've got stuff that's...
But I'm saying get it out to the public in a mailing or something.
No, oh, yeah. These are bill stuffers.
Yeah.
No, bill stuffers.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. The landscape conservation / landscape committee is, like I said, okay. Mr. Wynn and myself.
We could meet as soon as it works with you, Mr. Verheilig. Yeah. Tomorrow is particularly.
You don't need to set the meeting date. You guys should.
Tomorrow is bad, but Friday's okay.
Why don't once the committee's set, you guys can set and confer with.
Except when it's an ad hoc, we always say when we're going to report back.
So
we report back in 2 weeks.
Well, it just says April 12th.
That's just a recommendation.
Yeah.
I wanted to give time.
I think we should. We should attempt to give a status update every board meeting.
Okay.
And you know, just like for the personnel ad hoc committee too.
Good.
Ad hoc standing sub man tonight. Anyway, do we need to take a vote on this? Any action?
No.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Sykes. Then. Moving to the Santa Maria Interwaterline Intertie Ad Hoc Subcommittee, that would be one that would take this admin draft EIR and bring it to a draft condition.
For a public draft?
For a public draft.
Okay.
In an expedient manner, meaning inputs from the board members, which we're shooting to have in here by the 27th.
Good.
Meaning about 4 days, 5 days, and then take it from there. By the way, that would be Mr. Eby as chair and Mr. Wynn as...
Okay, let me understand what our action is. The other members of the board and ourselves are to read the EIR and have our comments ready before this meeting? Before that meeting on the, before the committee meeting?
I think, well,
let me see if I can just...
You haven't set a committee meeting yet.
Before the committee report.
It's in 45.
Before the
what do you envision?
I think that the ad hoc committee would review the administrative draft and comments and make a recommendation to the board.
Yes. Okay.
That way, you're going to make the recommendation to the board. One of the staff reports is going to say the ad hoc committee recommends approval, recommends denial, or split. Whatever it is that...
Well, I think it's going to be more than that. I think that we're going to go through and find typos and all that kind of stuff.
But I think that comes, that's I think that's incorporated into the,
okay.
the general.
Okay.
I don't think we need to, you know, pick each little line item. I think that to review the administrative draft of the environmental impact report and the public comments and make a recommendation. Does that mean that you can edit and say this is spelled wrong, there's this and that? Of course you can. Doesn't seem to me that that's
presumably we would comment if there were some major error or deletion.
Sure. Or there was something that wasn't there.
An omission of some
content
sort.
Was
yeah.
missing or yeah. something.
My expectation is that you would meet with the preparer.
Yeah. Well, that's what I was going to say. Depending on what we were tasked to do, I would also like to make sure that Buell is part of that, because I'd like to have his read on it.
Yeah. Well, he can't be on the committee.
But
he can be a staff. He can be a staff person or a resource.
He can attend the committee meeting.
Right.
And
yeah.
he can also provide input.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
The subcommittee knows Mr. Buell has had the admin draft in his hands. I think he's completed his review. He'll be ready to meet. He of course begins work on the 27th. And
I have a memo. I've read it, and I have a memo. I'd be happy to meet with the ad hoc committee to go over to.
And then it's a matter of really when the ad hoc committee is going to be, when you think, and maybe it's too early to tell us, when you're going to be ready to come back to the board recommendation when and then really the time scheduled forward for the public review draft and all that. But I think that's going to require the ad hoc committee to sit.
Do you think we should wait until Mr. Buell is here and then the four of us meet? Doug Wood, that is?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so there's no sense in us meeting with Doug Wood until
Buell's here. No, I'd like to have one meeting as long as 4 hours.
Good.
If it takes 4 hours, do it.
Good.
One afternoon.
And we can schedule his time. Again, he starts next Monday.
I know. Yeah.
So there's not
Monday week.
Any major delay there. So
I'll go home, look at my calendar, and see. I'd like to have the meeting next week. But I'll go home and look at my calendar, see when the best time is. We've got a RAC meeting on Wednesday, right?
Yes, we do.
Next week sometime, and I'll contact the Bruce and Wood?
Yeah, Doug Wood.
Yeah. Doug Wood. Is there a date when you want, is there a cutoff date in which board members should have their written comments to you?
Hopefully, yeah, before that meeting. Which would be no sooner than probably next Wednesday. Thursday would be a good day.
Wednesday morning or Thursday morning? I could do either one.
For comments or meeting?
The meeting.
The meeting.
And the comments should be available prior to the meeting.
Okay.
Done.
27th is Monday.
27th, 28th at the latest.
I will reiterate that with just, and of course we're all here for the exception of stuff, but I'll put that out as a reminder to everybody.
Yeah, okay. Great. Moving on then to manager's report, Mr. McBride.
I'll just avail myself to questions given the time. I tried to put some more information, some data together. I even said, you know, given time, I'll go over some graphical data I presented there, but.
I'll just make one comment on the general manager's report. Mr. LeBrun and I did discuss the notice of violation from the Regional Water Quality Control Board. I just wanted to report to the board that we've come to a conclusion that it's, depending how you interpret that letter, it's impossible for us to respond by March 6th with the detail that Ms. Marks or Roger Briggs seems to be demanding from the district. We're drafting a letter back to the regional board saying, look, we don't want to fight, we want to work cooperatively, but there's no way we can get that type of information back to you as quickly as you're making your demand. We're going to likely have to go out, do a request for a proposal, find an engineering firm that can do this type of stuff, to make a study and to make a recommendation. The quality of information that we respond to is going to be directly related to our financial burden and coming up with a cure for this, and we want to make sure we get it right. We don't want to be tossing out wild-haired theories and then performing the work to do it and then find out it doesn't change the BODs or we don't get some other relief. So it's a little more complicated than 15 days. Thank you.
Right. So John's going to help with the request for an extension. Now, I have spoke with regional board staff, and there's really more underlying here. And we've had difficulty with the BOD compliance. I don't think the BOD parameter is treating us correctly, if I may, in as far as what it's reporting on the plan. But there are bigger issues at Southland. This has come up some with the Black Lake and the salts, but Southland has a real salts issue. Southland also has a nitrates issue. These are two issues that ponding systems simply don't treat. Okay, our permit with the regional board is coming up on 10 years old, and what I see this process, we're going to start a process. It'll be cooperative, as John said. I've made it clear to the regional board. We are interested in improving the quality of our discharge because it is linked to the quality of our supply water. It's closely linked, so we have interest there. But what we want to try to get from the regional board up front as early as we can is an idea of a draft permit or what our next permit will look like. Our next permit, I can assure you, is not going to have the types. It'll have more limits than our current permit has in it. I expect salts limits. I expect nitrate limits. So if we can get them working with us so that they can give us numbers to design to instead of playing this game where we design a whole new plant upgrade and then 6 months later we get a new permit that says, oh, you've got new numbers to aspire to. So we'll look at it that way in a positive nature, and that this will get us on the path together with the regional board to ultimately a permit and a plant upgrade that will take us years, if not a decade, to achieve. But so that's okay. The BOD, the plant, I can tell you that the plant is operating and treating the way it's designed and the way the current permit. It's really biochemical oxygen demand is what this BOD acronym is talking about. There are a number of different flavors of BOD analysis and taste flavors, I assure you. In any event, that's what we're getting caught up in that our carbonaceous biochemical oxygen demand is just fine. We're hitting treatment levels. The odors are in check. The dissolved oxygen is good. The clarity of the opponents is good. But we've got this nitrifying bacteria working that's causing erroneous high BOD levels. And I'm positive of that because BOD comes across the ponds. It's getting knocked down, and then at the effluent, it jumps up. I know it's too late for all that explanation, but we're moving forward with the regional board, and we'll make very clear that we're going to respond and respond properly.
Mrs. Wilson.
Thank you very much. I think we really should keep this control board at bay. But anyway, I still, as many times as I've commented, you know, I'm a housewife besides a self-employed person. But I have actually noticed the water is rotting, is the only way I can explain it, and I've said it many, many times. Standing water is molding. So much, I've never noticed it so much as I have. Well, I've never noticed it before until the last year and a half or two. I mean, and it brings great concern to me. And I don't know what causes that. And
when you say molding, algae growth.
It's black.
There's a black algae growing in your water bowls. Should grow in your animal water bowls. Where I live on a well system without chlorination, it grows in our toilet bowls unless we throw a chlorine tablet in the tank.
Well, that's
what. Okay, that's and what that all that means is that our water, when we deliver it in a system, we chlorinate it for two purposes. One, if the system is breached and bacteria, that unhealthy bacteria enters the system, the chlorine kills it. Okay, that's why public water systems have to be chlorinated for distribution. However, once the water gets delivered, the chlorine, once it's in an open container, will start evaporating off and dissipating immediately.
Very cool.
If you have charcoal filters on your water, like Brita or anything like that, it will remove the chlorine. And nonetheless, that once the chlorine's gone, the water will support algae growth.
Well,
and I think that's what's occurring.
At this time of year,
it's been going on a long time, and I feel that we're not chlorinating enough because we've lived in the same house for 15 years.
We could be chlorinating less than we were when you first moved in, but I assure you we are chlorinating enough and in compliance with Department of Health standards. And to over-chlorinate, there are detrimental byproducts from over-chlorination, and there are quite a few people that put chlorine filters on their shower heads because they don't want chlorine water washing their body every day. So that it's
now that we're on this subject, I just remembered another thing that came to my mind. Because of this problem, I know I'm not the only person that's experiencing it. So therefore, people who clean their house are using more harsher chemicals, which is going down into the water system. So it's also can be creating another problem because we're cleaning more often, we're using more stringent,
A light chlorine bleach, a couple drops of chlorine where you're seeing these black algae form, we'll take care of it. I guess your suggestion is that we up the chlorine rate in our water system.
No, I just need, I know that there's a problem somewhere.
I will tell you this, that when people complain about water taste, the number one thing that causes that complaint is chlorine. That's the number one thing that people will complain. They don't always know it's chlorine, but if you get down to it, that's the one thing they're complaining about.
It seems to go in the same direction every time. I guess I need an explanation because it's not just something that's been going on forever. It's just started the last couple of years.
I got a couple of questions.
Okay, Mr. Eby.
I could do this here or I could do it in director's comments, but I might as well do it here. The IPAC system.
Yes.
When will we be able to use that to get reliable well level data? I look at it occasionally and it's not working. Doesn't seem to be working anymore.
Knollwood well went down for a period, so we lost its air tube. I believe Knollwood's back up. I think Via Conscious, the only well, the latest that I saw that wasn't. But in any event, as we outlined previously, the system, I think we're near complete of our original contract. I've got to sit down with a contractor and with a utility supervisor and go over some of the reporting functions and define who is responsible for calibrating the well table information, but making sure the well table information gets calibrated. But I think for the most part, our original contract is near completion.
I thought you said you were going to do an add-on where you were going to add the well levels to many or all of the wells.
Right, I'm looking at it right now, and we are, and actually that's been accomplished. And just running down the wells, we have Sundale, Eureka, Via Conscious even got me a well table number. That's new because that was, it looks like some improvement, but that number doesn't look good.
No, none of that.
But Bevington, Church, these all have well table numbers. Knollwood, Black Lake, both Black Lakes are up. So all wells reporting are reporting well levels. The question is getting those trued up and calibrated.
A couple days ago when I checked it, it wasn't working right.
I know, and as you saw by the billing, Mr. Anderson is, I think he's called for the meeting now with Mr. Megalazzo and myself to review the contract and talk about what's outstanding. Because there are other things he continues to support the district on, routine maintenance. So you'll see billing for him both under this contract and out. And we need to finish the contract, make that clean, finish completely.
Okay, the other thing was this Nipomo Mesa management activity.
Right.
Do you plan on activating that or getting something going on that?
That, yes.
Initiation is the word.
Yes,
you plan on initiating that.
Yes, where that's at, and that is, it's related to our recent contract that the board approved with SAIC. John's going to be able to tell me probably by the end of the week, early next week. SAIC is a bit different of a firm as far as the things that they want to enter into and don't want to enter into as far as indemnifications.
Sure.
I spoke with Mr. Beebe yesterday, and he assured me their contracts department is ready to do what John Seitz feels is right for this district in as far as indemnifications. So John's going to confirm that. We'll get a contract in place. And then Beebe is already, I told him to begin to work, and he's met with Bachman. Bachman's got the green light from ConocoPhillips. So those two guys are ready to sit down and I think we can.
I just didn't want that held up by people waiting for the trial to be over.
No. I think the board made that clear when we approved the contract.
Right. We decided to move.
And we'll get that going. And I like the timing of the telemetry system. I want to introduce Bachman and Beebe both to what we have here. The idea that we can add well sites, remote well sites, and project them onto our system for monitoring. You may have noticed the public records request we had. One of the requests was for all the well data we've been collecting, and at the point of that request, and there was only three or four wells reporting just a week ago. But that's quite a piece of information, because right now all those wells are reporting levels every 15 minutes.
Okay,
that's a lot of data. Anyway.
Okay. Well, thank you, Mr.
Right, and before you silence me completely, I'll just point out that monthly accounting summary right there on the front page. That's what we're doing to meet, again, the new special district law that talks about a monthly accounting report. Mm-hmm. So that's our first shot at that as we go. If you want to see some evolution, have some suggestions, we're open to those. Thank you.
Yeah, that's good. Okay, thank you. With that, we will move on to committee reports. Any committee meetings?
I'll report in advance. I'm going to try, this is just a recap of what I said. I'm going to try to get our committee, I'll check with everybody's availability. Probably Thursday would be the best day.
Okay.
It's the emptiest day on my calendar anyway.
Week from tomorrow?
Yeah.
All right.
And I'll ask anybody who has any inputs to VIR to get them to me or get them to Michael before the meeting so we can go over them at the meeting.
That'd be in the morning?
Which committee are you talking?
This is the ad hoc supplemental water committee.
Santa Maria Intertie.
And we'll try to get that, and the purpose of that meeting is primarily to review the administrative draft EIR, and I'll call the various people to see what their availability is. Thursday?
I'm good all morning.
How about afternoon?
From about 2 o'clock on, I'm at Poly.
Okay, so 9 o'clock?
7, 8, 9, clear till 1.
I don't even get to bed till 7. So. Okay.
AM or PM? Okay. So, any other committee reports? Okay, great. Director's comments? Mrs. Worsing?
I think I've said enough today.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Eby?
Nothing.
Mr. Wynn?
Just to say that you and I are meeting with Cacho tomorrow morning at 9:30 instead of 10. And
you bet.
We'll be talking about street sweeping, we'll be talking about flooding, and we'll be talking about these 2 1-acre parks. So
maybe a few other things here.
And we'll report back to you as soon as we get some. Cacho seems to be quite interested in pushing along on that.
Mm-hmm.
I do plan on going a Friday morning to San Francisco, to Santa Maria,
yeah, that's
to the to the, and it's in City Hall, not the courthouse, so.
Right.
If it starts at 9:30, if I'm there at 9, am I likely to find a seat?
Not
it's not a very big room.
It's not a very big room.
It's not as big. It's not any bigger than this.
The state council
a little,
chambers.
Not much bigger. Small. Yeah, it's.
They got benches that you sit on cushions, and it's pretty.
City of Santa Maria.
Yeah, the city hall.
Classical city hall. Right?
It's a nice old.
It's a nice old building.
But it's not very comfortable sitting.
Kind of dark.
That way they keep the audience down to a minimum.
Yeah, they don't
love me. I don't know. I have a hearing on a Los Osos case that morning, so I doubt that I will be there.
Yeah. Anyway, there's that, and the RAC will meet on the 1st, and I'm meeting tomorrow with Pavel Ogren to go over the agenda for that.
Going to have the RPD on that?
And the RPD will be on that. John Knoll will be making essentially the same presentation. How would we go about letting the Regional Quality Control Board, in your experience, would it be better just to tell them that the presentation will be made, they're welcome to come, or should we encourage them to make their own meeting with him separately?
Yeah, I think the Regional Board, if they're going to show interest, we'll show interest on the circulation of the EIR. But they won't. If you're talking about rural plan development.
Yes, I am. Yeah,
that would be my thought.
Okay.
You may, they'll pitch it to them differently. I think they'll go, well, that's interesting planning document for one of our 9 counties that we deal with, but we typically don't get involved in planning documents. We'll look at the EIR when it's circulated.
Okay.
Is there any
sense in which they might sort of do a preemptive strike? Say, we understand you're thinking of doing the IR, given something this magnitude, we would certainly hope that you would include blah 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 blah.
In my opinion, no.
Okay.
Because I don't think they see it as that magnitude that we see it as.
Okay.
Different perspective.
Well, that's you would know. That's why I'm asking. I won't waste my effort on that. That's it.
Okay. I'll be very brief. The Old Town Golf Classic is going to be March 25th. You can go out golf and go to dinner. You can just go to dinner. You can sponsor a hole. You can do any combination of the above. Just came out. Notice of preparation for an EIR on the county's general plan for parks and recreation element update. So that document has taken another step closer to doom. and I think you all received this email from Lori Ion up at the Templeton CSD. A great way to save yourself a trip to Sacramento would be to attend the AB1234 ethics training workshop that they'll put on, and she says March 22nd.
Does
which,
it mean
which would be our board meeting day, but it's in the afternoon from 2:30 to 4:30.
Does it meet the state
yes.
criteria?
Yes, we are hiring the law firm of Donahoe and Allen, same law firm that's been helping us.
Okay,
they have a section in their law firm for compliance, and they have 2 trained.
And what's the date on that again?
It'll be March 22nd from 2:30 to 4:30.
At
so
Templeton.
At Templeton. So we will have a very expeditious board meeting that day, so we can high up go up there.
Right.
Or book a hay up there.
And we do. And first of all, you will get your certificate for compliance, so this, we have retained, we were very careful to make sure that whoever we retained, and by the way, it was a competitive process. It was.
Do we sign up with staff here,
yeah.
and they all send one?
Yeah, right, and then
put me down.
There will be refreshments.
Put me down, too. And if, although This is on March 4th. It'll be the Napomo Native Garden Work Day. We have 402 plants which we will be placing into the ground to expand our coastal sage scrub and coastal dune scrub habitat area. So if your back is feeling great, bring a shovel, work gloves, water, hat, sunscreen, work boots, clothes, those kinds of things, and we'll have at it.
Can you come back to me for a second?
Yes,
announcement?
Please.
March 4th, I want to compete with you.
Oh.
On March 4th, the Land Conservancy is having a dedication ceremony to the new property out on Calendar Road.
I know.
And,
I know.
And Highway 1 that was just acquired to become the first part of the Black Lake Canyon State Park, which is what we hope it'll turn into. And there's going to be a design, I like to call it charade.
Yeah, right.
Where the people that attend there are going to get to give their ideas on what they think they ought to be done with that property. Boardwalks over the water and stair steps around and, you know, just generally what should be done to keep and preserve the property. It's Saturday at 9 o'clock at Calendar and Highway 1.
But if you'd like to lose some weight, do some physical labor, the garden's the place to do it. Yeah, that's, I know, Michael and I were discussing, you know, I'd like to be there too.
And if you will let me revisit one more thing?
Yes, please.
This coming Monday night, the NCAC is considering changing their name to the South County Advisory Council, which is very nice because since the NCSD powers can form a MAC, we actually would have the name Napomo Advisory Council available to us should we decide to move in that direction.
That's true. That's true. So it's going to be SAC, S?
Well, we were trying to...
South County Advisory.
SNAC.
We were trying, one guy was trying to make it South County Advisory Group, then it could be SCAG. But then some of the people didn't like the sound of that, and probably South County Advisory Council, SCAC.
Everybody likes the word council, although the legislation only approves committee.
Yeah, but the resolution from the Board of Supervisors said council.
But the state legislation that empowers it.
So, with that,
yeah,
thank you, one and all. Meetings adjourned if late.
Check for sound, just in there, help yourself.
I'll give you jingles instead of trying to get together.
Well,
the guy and I are going to give a presentation. I'll probably be tired after that. It's ridiculous.
I plan to come to the gardens on Saturdays.
Okay. But yeah, you know, I had thought, gee, I, you know, I'd like to go to that thing at Blackley Canyon.
Yeah, I know.
It's the same day as that garden.
There's only one Saturday a week. You got to do what you got to do.
Man, this gets too busy. And then you and I are going to be up in snow tomorrow.
Yes.
Or fast, which I whatever you want to call it.
I'm meeting with Paavo Ogren at 8, so I'll be going even earlier.
Would you care if I call Don Carollo over at the refinery?
No, not at all.
Get at least sort of planning on we would like to, and
yes.
He could email me some
excellent
dates and whatnot.
Excellent.
Okay, I'll go do that. Well, thank you all for hanging in here. Thanks, Jen. It's been a real pleasure.
Yeah.
Why don't I believe you from the time
you've been like an adrenaline go.
Sorry.
That's all right.
and then you come here and sleep.
I think only that won't change, and I've just got to pull out those codes.
This is the most productive 18 months in this organization's history.
And it's the best viewed by the general public.
Yeah.
That's the key.
Yeah, that's the key.
So, anyway, it's still recorded.
Meeting. I said first.